This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to this CIO market update from LGIM. I'm Max Julius, Head of Content, and I'm delighted to be joined by Sonia Loud, CIO, Shaunak Mazumda, Senior Fund Manager, and David Barron, Head of Index Equity and Smart Beta. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the pod. Morning.
Good morning, Max.
Morning.
Morning. Well, in today's call, in addition to chewing over a number of noteworthy macro and market developments, there will be an even greater ESG flavor to the discussion than usual ahead of LGIM's first ever sustainability summit next week. So with no further ado, Sonia, let's start where we always do. What do investors need to know about the latest virus developments, the health of the global economy, and the state of financial markets today?
Yes, absolutely. With great pleasure, Max, and thank you very much for listening. So if we look at the latest developments, I think as always, we should look at it separately. So if we start with the virus developments and obviously more with greater emphasis on the vaccination rollout, I think vaccination rollouts are continuing as before, and we are seeing great successes, not only in the US and the UK, as we've done before, but clearly Europe is catching up a lot. So with that in mind, the reopening plans and the focus on normalization clearly are gathering pace. Now, having said that, it's very clear that the Indian variant is making headlines, and it's worrying headlines because it's now in the UK the dominant strain, with 58% of new infections coming from the Indian variant. And clearly we've had a more cautious approach now from the UK government with regards to the 21st of June full normalization kind of plan, or as Boris Johnson has called it, the path to freedom. So there's probably a bit of a dampening coming from the Indian variant. And we always knew that we are not out of the woods yet. It's kind of a race, the vaccination rollout versus new infections. But for the time being, if we look at the big picture, and moving now to the economic side, clearly that will not change our forecasts dramatically. And this means that we are still in for a really strong cyclical recovery in the second half. We are seeing really strong data points coming from the PMIs, the purchasing manager indices. We are seeing this particular in the USK, but with obviously the latest successes across Europe, we are expecting this to be very similar here as well. Now, having said that, when you look at markets, very clearly the question is, and we've discussed in the past, how much is priced in? You know, are valuation levels still attractive? And how should investors look at the positioning right now and the potential risks in the future? One topic is emerging as the hottest one, and clearly will be one that's not only driving markets for the rest of 21, but maybe even more so in the future, and that is inflation, i.e. is the massive amount of stimulus coming from fiscal and monetary policies driving up inflationary pressures. And we're obviously having a very timely podcast because CPI data is expected in the US today, later in the afternoon. And if we recall, the latest CPI print obviously has been a massive upside surprise. And the reason why I'm stressing it so much is because this will have huge implications on central bank policy, and we will get the ECB later today. So really there is a balancing act between markets obviously being very much supported by strong economic growth, and hence the translation this has on financial success of companies. But then, you know, this big question, will this mean that stimulus measures will be tapered or removed earlier than what markets anticipating, and hence the potential risks this is having? Hence, I believe very timely for today, really focusing on what does it all mean and how should investors look at it, because it's very clear that it will have very strong implications. Equity markets are at all-time highs, and although it seems that we are moving more sideways right now, a lot is going on underneath the kind of headline levels. And likewise, we are seeing that spreads in the credit market are still very, very tight. again, investors should question how much more is in there. And then last but not least, on the government bond side, clearly with the latest inflation prints, very interestingly, we haven't seen that same reaction function in government bond markets, particularly not in nominal yields. But here we have had a rather disappointing jobs market. And so clearly the market is telling us maybe the Fed can hang in there for a lot longer and they don't have to taper prematurely. So lots to talk about. And we will definitely come to ESG as one of the major factors that is driving the activity underneath. And so I'm sure we will have lots of very interesting topics to talk about.
Thank you very much for that overview, Sonia. And yes, let's move to a really important market theme of late. Dave, we've recently witnessed a reversal of the long-standing outperformance of growth versus value. What does the performance of these and other factors, say momentum, tell us about how durable this trend might be?
Yeah, thank you. It what a sigh of relief, I think, collectively for the market, right? When we saw that bit of reversal. I was just opening my spreadsheet the other day entitled Is Value Dead? And that was put together in 2019 when that kind of rhetoric was becoming popular. You know, what have we missed here? Is it growth forever? So seeing that reversal was big. You could link some of that to rates and inflation potentially as one of the headwinds that's been around for some time on the value factor. But I guess to put the numbers into context, relative to a market cap equity index, so you know, kind of your standard benchmark, 8 to 10% since September of last year, on a relative basis is what value's kind of gapped up. And that brings to mind what value is supposed to do. It's always been this coil, this spring, right, that pulled back some unloved companies that suddenly, you know, the market collectively says, whoa, there's something here. These companies are valuable. And the spring can be really impressive when uncoiled if value becomes momentum, right? If these stocks kind of shift into the buckets, into that momentum bucket and carry on the trend. And I think one of the interesting observations, well, two interesting observations. One, we still haven't recouped the relative drawdown yet, despite that big bounce back in value performance. So the drawdown is technically still in the realm of about 10 years on a relative basis. So we're still technically underwater with respect to value bouncing back. And I think one of the things that we said early on in the value is dead conversation was the bounce back is not likely going to be the same spring, a full uncoiling of the spring that we've seen historically. And just the rhetoric in the market, a lot of investors to pick points to kind of exit, to say, look, I've recouped some of my loss, I'm going to jump out now. And so actually we've seen a little bit of a kind of a stepping of the spring this time, as opposed to a full unleashing of value potential. So I think that's an interesting observation, but potentially more to come. Other factors, you know, typically momentum and growth are on the other side of that coin. So a little bit of a pullback on that side of the story, you know, and I think, you know, something that to definitely watch. You know, everyone always points to the mega tech stocks and what are they going to do and when, and you know, I'm not going to say anything on the prediction side because it's a tough one. But I think that the observation is there are so many views out there on, you know, there's a lot of room there versus they're toppy, there's concentration risk, well, they're diversified businesses. So, you know, I think we'll see this bit of a fight play out a bit longer in factor space, but a lot to look forward to as markets kind of start to bounce back and reopening trades start to come into play.
Right, yeah, so it's fair to say that the reports of value's demise have definitely been exaggerated. On a related question, how have ESG tilted indices been performing in the year to date?
Yeah, so I guess it's a funny one because depends on the ESG index you pick. There are a lot out there. Holistically, I think what you tend to see is a bit of a modest growth bias in a lot of these ESG indices, a little bit larger cap bias, tend to be underweight energy. The companies don't score too well on many ESG metrics. You know, just again, in general. So I think, yeah, there's been a bit of a wobble. You know, there's strong performance in a lot of ESG indices over the last 5 to 6 years relative to market. And definitely we've seen kind of a wobbling, a slowing down of that in a lot of the regions. So yeah, you know, a bit more of a steady state. And I think, you know, something to look out for as again, we we see these index perform, you know, ex post out of sample. That's the key. A lot of these built in the back test mode. So, you know, the future is an important one.
Well, let's return to the question of ESG indices later in the call, but now let's move to Shaunak. Stay with ESG as a theme. Income inequality is clearly a key sustainability theme. How big an impact do you think the recent tax move by the G7 is likely to have on tech stocks?
Yeah, thanks, Max. So I think it's definitely an interesting conversation, and tax has always been something that most tech investors have been looking at for a period of time, because we know that most of the mega cap names, particularly Facebook, Google, Twitter, Intel, etc., all have lower tax rates or effective tax rates because they do get domiciled in different regions than the US. A few years back, if you recall, this was a big topic with Apple. And Apple had close to $150 billion sitting overseas. And that was a big question mark in terms of how some of that money makes it back. I think broadly speaking, I view this as probably quite positive to see a concerted effort to make it a bit more streamlined and unanimous across all of the different companies. So I think this has traditionally been a risk for a lot of investors, knowing that the tax overhang is something at some stage which actually comes back into play. The real question will be how this is implemented, whether it's smoothly done, and then ultimately what some of the knock-on impacts of some of those taxes would be. So in the example of Apple, which I just used, repatriate the money back to the US, it's about $150 billion, that made its way back into share buybacks. And Apple has now crossed $1 trillion of market cap, or now closing to $2 trillion. So ultimately, I view it as actually being a modest sort of something that the market will need to digest. And then ultimately, the question is, how is some of that money ultimately utilized from a returns perspective? It's interesting also that just yesterday, the Senate passed a bill where the US government is now putting money into technology investments with regards to competition with China. So I think this is all moving towards a direction where companies and governments are realizing that technology is becoming an increasingly important force and one that is becoming part of many different industries. So we call technology, but they all now sit in many different sectors and they're quite large. And also from an employment perspective, they are quite large companies. So I think ultimately the question will be if these companies continue to distribute income both in the way of the taxes that are collected, but also the wages and then the buybacks that go back to shareholders. So broadly view this as being over the long term, probably a positive. Near term, there might be some question marks as to how it gets implemented.
Right. And more broadly, from an active perspective, in which sectors and types of companies do you see most opportunities for sustainable returns going forward?
Yeah, so that's a good question, Max. I guess broadly, when we think about sustainability, I think taking a longer term approach or taking a longer term lens is really, really quite important. So we know that disruption and the risk of disruption that we've seen, particularly coming through COVID periods, has been quite high. And ultimately, a lot of market participants or forecasts tend to be very near-term in focus. So a lot of the forecast period tends to be only 3 years. So most of the major banks or sell side, even companies, will only forecast up to a year at best, maybe 3 years. So when we think about sustainability, it's really thinking about long-term sustainability. So when we build any of our models for companies that we would own, it would be 8 to 10 year forecasts to really think about what does the business look like through life cycles. And then what is the level of disruption that you could see and ultimately that these businesses have sustainable high returns in some of the big disruptions that are happening. So whether it's electric vehicles, whether it might be shifts in the way people are buying products, or whether it's from physical to digital. So I think thinking about that as being a core in terms of sustainability and how we map through the products is quite important. Now, in terms of where we are positioned and where we think there's going to be a fairly long runway in terms of not just growth, but also earnings are some of the few sort of key, the three sort of macro themes that we use within LGIM. So our technology, energy, and demographics. But within technology, one of the key areas that we're seeing increasingly more and more spend is on the data as an asset side. So data is becoming increasingly more valuable. So the more information someone has about me and where I'm traveling to, what I'm doing on the internet, it becomes increasingly more valuable. And companies want this information, and that information then becomes used towards advertising and can be used in terms of other products as well. So Dave's talked about sort of just broadly indices as well. So data is increasingly becoming quite important. So that's a theme that we like to play. Digital enablers. So to a certain extent, we think that the trend or the shifts that have happened through COVID, a lot of them will be quite structural in nature. So some of these big shifts, so whether it's cash to card, whether it's e-commerce penetration, whether it's different functions like software businesses, which allow for you to actually transition onto digital enabled programs, I think will be quite important. The third one is probably within digital advertising. So today, 70% of all advertising is now digital. That number used to be close to 20% only 7 years back. So there's been a big shift in terms of way we've seen that shift happen. And then moving on to the demographic side, I think one of the big and longer term sustainable themes will be thinking about aging populations. So we know that already in North America and Europe, by next year, you'll have more people over the age of 65 than under the age of 15. So there's a clear shift happening, which then means that the way in which products are going to be purchased and what's important is also going to shift. And then finally, I think on the energy side and the climate solution side, that's a big one. I think we'll all kind of, you touched on the sustainability summit, but that's increasingly becoming more relevant as a topic. And you're starting to see that shift in the way governments like Germany's kind of stepped up their carbon emission targets, so has China and so has the US. And I think that's only now going to accelerate the pace in which some of these companies and investors will need to look for climate solutions and which businesses will be relevant on a 10-year view.
Well, thanks, Sean. It's great to hear there are still so many opportunities for active fund managers out there. Sonia, returning to your comments earlier about inflation, of course, the flurry of central bank meetings that are coming up, how significant a risk, in your view, is it that policymakers unsettle markets over the near term with their plan for stimulus removal? Bigger picture, are investors in for a hot summer?
I think from a weather perspective, we would all hope it's going to be a hot summer, but let's see from a markets angle. Before talking about the ECB, I think what is so amazing to see from our discussion here, how the macro thematic approach is coming together, right? Because we're talking about a significantly changed macroeconomic backdrop. We have a much broader growth angle that clearly has supported the value style. We're seeing dramatic shifts and acceleration in long-term structural themes, as Shonak has highlighted. And now here we are now with the central bank question, you know, how can this feature within that setup? And as we know, particularly because stimulus has been so overwhelming in driving market forwards, we are facing a twin support that is unprecedented in its magnitude in providing market and economies with liquidity. And clearly markets have to be aware what happens if after that long period of a very one-sided support from central banks, inflation will force the hand and will force a reversal in interest rates. And I think, to be honest, the Fed, I think, has the bigger balancing act to juggle, simply because the inflationary trends are much stronger than in Europe. And hence our expectation is for the ECB to acknowledge clearly the change in the underlying dynamics, but there's not that same pressure because the data points are still very comfortably in their zone. But clearly we do expect that with the new forecast from the team, they will produce today a more hawkish a hawkish hold, i.e. continue with the support, and will refer to incoming data points that will guide their communication in the future. But let's not forget the upside surprise in the US is far more uncomfortable for the Fed, although clearly they have prepared markets already that they would look through and look at the average inflation and before acting. But that clearly will create more volatility. And this is why everything else we've said until now is so important, because within that volatility still it's clearly about identifying those opportunities that are linked to those structural themes and the acceleration, particularly in ESG, that we have seen.
Well, thanks for talking through those dynamics and staying with the theme of ESG and sustainability. Dave, how do you see investor expectations of ESG indices evolving over the near and medium term?
Sure, yeah. So the pace of change is the fascinating thing with the index industry now. And I think investor expectations, originally on a journey, exploratory, what is this? What the impact is gonna be? How can I think about it? And now, we've seen a wave of customization of opinions being formed, and on the back of that, a lot of new products. And I guess what's the expectation? I think it's going to be one of adaptation, right? Being able to keep flagship products relevant over time by bringing in the best information, the best thinking, new data points. There's high cost to switch, and the purpose of an index portfolio is low cost and transparency. So, I think having a mousetrap that can evolve over time and bring in the latest thinking is critical. And I guess to bring that to light, the climate solution space and index is one that is very, very fast in evolution. So 5-6 years ago, CO2 emissions was the only available metric, and you built products reducing that, and that was the focus. And suddenly, right, the trajectory just changed. So, should you think about CO2 emissions on a sector relative basis? Can we bring in green revenue? Can we look at fossil fuel reserves holding and think about coal reserves versus oil and gas? And then fast forward to today, decarbonization pathways and temperature alignment, right? Metrics to help us assess, the momentum behind a company and the likelihood of them hitting targets. So it's extremely fast paced. And I guess, the expectations that we're seeing, definitely products that can keep up, because having a product that it becomes stale is obviously not appealing. And I guess, to give it a term, is there's probably going to be a bit of an ESG graveyard in 5 years' time is kind of the way we're thinking about it, of products that just couldn't keep up, I guess.
Well, that's fascinating, encouraging. And I love your mousetrap analogy as well. Shaunak, you speak to corporate management teams every week. To what extent are companies stepping up to meet rising investor expectations on ESG issues? And how do you differentiate between real action and greenwashing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So actually, just kind of going back to one of the points that Dave raised in terms of just some of the flows, it's interesting if you just look at year-to-date flows up until May 15th. So there's been about $140 billion that's gone into active equity products. Half of which, $70 billion, have been into active ESG products. So effectively, if you think about active and active ESG, and active being the sort of mover of the dial in terms of incremental buyers or sellers of assets, you're clearly seeing a shift, and that's happening underneath the surface. And that's incrementally changing the way companies are engaging, what they're buying, what's happening to multiples. Similarly, on the index side, I'm sure Dave would kind of tell you that I think now 17% just year to date of asset flows have been into ESG. Now, what that means from a what form of ESG is kind of the big question. But clearly what's happening is that there's a sophistication in the industry. So taking Dave's example around carbon and what that meant for scope 1 and scope 2, I think it was quite easy, for example, just taking an example of consumer companies. So Heineken and General Mills, I'll just take two examples there. About 90% for Heineken and 95% of General Mills carbon or CO2 sits in scope 3. So they all report quite low carbon to begin with, but now there's a realization that actually there's so much of carbon sitting in the supply chain, which was never captured. And these companies were predicted to be sort of low carbon by nature. So it's an interesting shift that's happening underneath. And I think it's becoming increasingly important, and I think investors and companies are needing to get more sophisticated. So a few years back, when we were talking to companies, I think a lot of the European companies understood what ESG meant. And I think ESG's largely led the way, particularly in Europe. And I think a lot of the big investors sort of came out of Europe. And I think that that definitely moved the dial. But it's now shifting in the US. So we'll go and speak to companies and we'll ask them for targets and ask them to actually put out numbers in terms of what their carbon reduction numbers would look like, and not to put out 2050 targets with no sort of glide path towards that. And also really looking at net zero and how they kind of think about the full value chain, because ultimately what you want to be investing in is companies which have sustainable business practices and also sustainable products. And consumers are making decisions based on those end decisions. So whether you have a fully sustainable consumer product, you're clearly starting to see shifts in demand dynamics, which then also influences companies in the types of products that they release. The second point is even just on the multiple side, you're clearly seeing there continues to be a divergence between highly rated ESG companies, and I'm talking fully understood. So not just the metrics are better, but actually this is a sustainable business practice, they tend to trade a better multiple. So a lot of companies are now using that as the carrot to kind of chase behind. And then us as investors are kind of using the stick to say, have you looked at another company, let's call it in Europe. So we were speaking to an industrial company a few weeks back. I won't name the name, but we used another industrial company in Europe, which is Emerson. And they disclose a lot more. So they talk about what their ratings would be, what their green revenues would look like, what their carbon emission scores. And this company in the US was just completely oblivious. They reached back out to us to actually talk to us as to how they could go about doing this. What are some of the steps that some other companies have gone down? Because this is increasingly becoming important, not just for the companies and their consumers, but also investors and ultimately our end clients as well, who are asking for these for the reporting back on this.
Right, that's really interesting, especially the points around data measurability and disclosures from companies. Sonia, is there anything you'd like to add before we finish up, especially as we look towards next week's summit?
Yes, absolutely. Because I think that it's been a really good discussion that shows that we are at an inflection point. We are at an inflection point in markets. And it's very clear with the focus around the support of central bank stimulus measures, we bring this in line with market valuations where market levels are, that there are very, very important questions that will come up for investors to think about what the trajectory might look like. Inflation will play a very important role. And I think this is clearly a big change if we think back the past 10, even 20 years. But I think there's another inflection point, and this is linked to ESG and the level of acceleration we have seen, because it's very clear that ESG integration is now seen as a standard. And that is a dramatic shift from what we have seen just 1 or 2 years ago. And with that comes a real inflection point for asset managers. And I think this is, or I hope this is very clear from the way we have talked about it. Because there is an expectation that not only we as an asset manager take the responsibility to look at it from a far more holistic lens, but there's an expectation as well that there is a force for good and that we can effect positive change in the way we engage. Engagement for us is at the center of our investment process, because we believe that we have to be a partner to a company on their way to a sustainable future. And this, with everything what Dave and Shauna have said, I hope it's very clear, we are doing this holistically. We're speaking with one voice and we are engaging on behalf of all our shareholders, whether they're invested in our passive or in our active funds. And I think that's really at the center of this massive shift and the inflection point, how we have to think about our process, but clearly will have hopefully really good implications for long-term returns, because I think we all agree there will be relative winners and losers. There's a big shift underway from a market and from an ESG point of view, which creates a lot of opportunities, but will have risks on the way as well.
Well, thanks, Sonia. And finally, I'd just like to ask you all what you've been watching reading or listening to recently to pass the time as lockdown ebbs. I'll get the ball rolling. I actually got married last week, so I haven't had a huge amount of time to consume media, but I did watch a great BBC period drama called Parade's End in between figuring out seating plans, etc. Sonia, would you like to go next?
Oh, congratulations, first of all. That's fabulous. And clearly far more exciting than watching or reading. I actually, I'm still reading a very fascinating book from Margaret Heffernan on willful blindness, which can be applied on so many of the things we've talked about today, and particularly the way around how we look at big societal issues, climate change, and how to tackle them. But I have been reading the book from Bill Gates as well on how avoiding the climate disaster, and actually in parallel a book from David Attenborough, all in the same context, because I'm a big fan not only of his documentaries, which are very family friendly and hence can be applied across the whole family, but obviously are incredibly relevant.
Absolutely. Dave?
Yeah, so I do. I'm a book alternator as well. I've got a very young, 6 months now, who gets up quite early. So it's a perfect time to, sit there and read. So currently, and I alternate between what I meant to say was books related to what I do and then books related to a fascination with astrophysics and quantum physics. So currently a book called The Janus Point. It's about time's arrows and reversibility of time, which actually, for anyone who's seen Tenet, is a real there's a real science behind reversal of activities. It's possible, or theoretically possible, I should say. So that's the most recent book that I'm on. Previous to that, Radical Uncertainty, Mervyn King. So you can see the link to finance there. But yeah, keeping me busy.
That's great. We've got a great reading list from this podcast so far. And finally, Shaunak, what have you been consuming of late?
Well, first off, again, Max, congratulations. It sounds like you've been doing a lot more productive than what we've been up to. So I've a side passion of mine continues to be on cognitive biases. So I've been reading Predictably Irrational by Dan Ariely, which is all about, to a certain extent, how economics is economics, but then it also tends to fail when you actually have humans in the seats. And there's so many different good lessons on that, especially we won't go into the meme stocks, but there's a lot to be learned on there. And then on the more recreational side, I got pushed into watching Formula One on Netflix. If anyone hasn't watched that, it's definitely recommended, but got me back into Formula One, which I used to watch when I was quite younger, but it is it's a great show, a lot of emotion and drama.
Yes, I've heard that, and thank you for adding to our even weightier now reading list. Well, that's a great point on which to end this month's call. Thank you, Sonia, Shaunak, and Dave for your time today, and thank you to you, our clients and listeners, for joining us. Our next edition of the CIO Call will be in July. In the meantime, you can find further updates here on our podcast channel, including this show's new weekly sister program, Market Talk, in which our head of investment strategy and research, Ben Bennett, offers brief hot takes on key questions for investors.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating, or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous, on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website, elgim.com.